Hello everyone and welcome to the next HDS podcast. Today we are interviewing a horticulture intern and talking about safely using chemicals and pesticides in our home gardens and on our lawns. We're also finding better alternatives that we can use. I'm your host Lori Vanagunas and joining me today is Kaylin Hammett, the horticulture intern.
Hey, thanks for having me today.
Thank you, Kaylin, for being here. I'd like to start by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself and what piqued your interest in horticulture.
So I'm a fourth-year student here at CSU studying horticultural food crop production and organic agriculture. I manage our school's Campus Grown Foods Partnership greenhouse just south of main campus, as well as work many other jobs and volunteer in the horticulture industry. I've always been interested in science and nature, and when I grew my first tomato plant in high school, I was so amazed that a tiny little seed could produce a plant yielding hundreds of fruits that could feed me and my family throughout the whole summer. Since then, I've really grown a passion for growing fruits and vegetables sustainably and teaching others how to do the same.
That's great. We're glad you're here. You guys also do the lettuce for the dining centers, is that correct?
Yes, we don't provide 100% of the lettuce 100% of the time, but usually they'll put out a sign saying campus grown foods or campus grown lettuce when it is ours.
That's awesome. I know the students appreciate that. So before we get into the specifics of our topic, do you have any tips or advice for those of us who are just starting with their home gardens?
Absolutely. So I feel like a lot of folks starting a garden for the first time set their expectations a little too high. Just know that your produce might not look exactly the same that the stuff at the grocery store or the farmer's market does. Those people know what they're doing. They do it really well. They've been doing it for decades or even generations. So don't set your expectations too high so that you don't get disappointed when your stuff doesn't look like theirs. It'll still be delicious. It'll still be homegrown and rewarding. And just know that there will be a learning curve to all of this, especially growing in Colorado where our weather is so crazy and unpredictable.
Good advice. So, Kaylin, one of the very cumbersome chores that we gardeners and those of us that have lawns have to do is weeding. Chemicals are an easy solution to this. Can they be used safely, though?
That is a good question. So chemicals that are available in places like Home Depot or Lowe's straight off the shelf, they will always have a label on the back of them to tell you how to use them safely. This is required by the Environmental Protection Agency so that we can make sure the consumers are protecting themselves when using these dangerous chemicals, because they can be dangerous if you apply them incorrectly. Some health effects that can come from overexposure to pesticide residues over time include neurological disorders and even some cancers. So when we're applying these, it's really important that we read the label really thoroughly and make sure that we're applying on the right weeds. Some herbicides only treat grasses, some only treat what are called broadleaf weeds, everything that's not a grass essentially. And that we're applying at the right stage as well. So if your weeds are already a foot tall, now is not the time to be applying herbicide. At that point, you just need to rip them out and apply the herbicide. The package will say, but usually it is under 3 inches or so. Sometimes it can even be smaller than that. So if you're going to apply an herbicide, it's important to be proactive and apply them at the right stage, or use other control methods before you apply an herbicide. To reduce your exposure overall, it's always best to just apply less. So if you're using other strategies like just pulling the weeds before they get bad, you know, dense enough to warrant using an herbicide as a last resort, that's a really good way to protect yourself in that sense. You can also always, it's a good rule of thumb to cover as much skin as you can while you're applying an herbicide. So closed-toed shoes, long pants, long sleeves, and even a bandana around the nose and mouth to make sure you're not inhaling any of the particles that might volatilize into the air.
That's good to know. So we talked about the impact of chemicals on humans, but what about our pets and other animals and even bugs? Can they be impacted?
Absolutely. So people often think of the adverse health effects that come from eating something contaminated with pesticides or touching something contaminated with pesticides. That's a big reason many people are moving to towards organic, purchasing organic foods instead of conventional. But you have to think about this in terms of your lawn and your garden as well. If you're applying fertilizers or pesticides in your garden several times a year for several decades, think about how much residue you might be accumulating over time. For your pets and your children, this is even more relevant because think about how they move through your lawn and your garden. They might be stepping through with bare feet. Your dogs might be eating the grass. Your kids even might be eating the grass. So it's really important to make sure that when you apply something, you keep your pets inside for a specific amount of time. It usually will say on the container, like, don't let anyone into the lawn for 4 hours after you apply this. Really stick to that and make sure that everyone is staying safe. Keep your children inside. Do all of those sorts of things to make sure that no one gets any adverse health outcomes of that. When we over-apply any kind of pesticides, something that can happen is after you turn on your irrigation system or it rains, the excess pesticide, or if it hasn't been long enough for it to dry out, even anything that you did apply that was the correct amount, can run off into a nearby water system, a water body, and if enough pesticide accumulates in that system, it can start to kill fish and aquatic animals. So it's really important to, again, follow the instructions on the label to prevent that from happening, apply at the right weather conditions, those sorts of things. In terms of other wildlife that we may see, you know, squirrels, bunnies, things like that, over-applying herbicides where we may not need to can eliminate sources of habitat or food sources for those mammals throughout the year. A really good example, and this goes into our next topic of bugs, is dandelions, which are the most common lawn weed that people fight with throughout the year, are actually the first nectar source for pollinators in the spring. The flowers are one of the first to open up, especially in Colorado, where we have such a temperamental switch from winter to spring. So if you can stand the sight of them in your lawn, a good rule of thumb is, I like to call it no mow May, or you can say no spray May, to just leave those dandelions alone until the end of May to make sure that once you do kill them, if you decide to do that with a pesticide or by mowing, that there are other nectar sources so the pollinators can thrive and then come back later to pollinate your garden plants. And our final point in this is talking about insecticides. Insecticides are a class of pesticides that kill insects in your garden, so a grub eating your lawn or aphids on your tomatoes. So some insecticides contain a substance called neonicotinoids.
Neonicotinoids.
Yes. Okay. And these are really, really damaging to insects, but especially pollinators. So what happens is they accumulate the neonicotinoids after landing on a plant that's been treated with them. They accumulate it on their legs, on their body. They may even eat a part of the plant that was sprayed, and they take it back to the hive, and shortly after, the insect itself begins developing neurological distress that leads to death, and it can spread that substance around in the hive, which is a huge contributing factor to colony collapse disorder, which is something that is depleting our pollinating insects and our bees extremely fast. So if you can, look up a neonicotinoid-containing insecticide list. It's really easy to on Google. Or look for an EPA label on whatever insecticide you're buying to make sure that it does not contain neonicotinoids.
That's great to know. I'll make sure to watch for that. And I appreciate you bringing up the need to be protected when spraying stuff and to err on the side of caution by using less pesticide, etc., and more. Great advice. Kaylin, horticulture is big in the summertime, of course. Are there ways to keep things growing year-round in a climate like Fort Collins?
Yes, there are a lot of DIY things that you can do inside your home. Google is full of suggestions, but I will give you a few. In our greenhouse on campus, we use a system called hydroponics to produce our lettuce for housing and dining. And what that is basically growing plants without any soil. So we take water and mix it with liquid fertilizer, and we may have to adjust the pH a little bit so that it's in a good range for the plants. And that way we can grow lettuce and leafy greens without having to get messy with soil. So your home could already be the perfect temperature over the winter to grow these leafy greens and lettuces. If you're between the high 60s and the mid 70s in your home, you can absolutely grow these things in hydroponics. Just make sure that they have a decent amount of light. Sometimes a window just isn't sufficient, so you can go to the hardware store and pick up a plant grow light, or a bulb even, to put in an existing light fixture that you might have. Another great option is just a little windowsill herb garden or something along those lines, but making sure that it has enough light is paramount in the success of that system.
Good to know. All right, Caitlin, one quick question. Tell me, what's your favorite part of working in the horticulture industry?
That is probably the hardest question of them all. I think that the diversity of specialties in our industry is awesome, and I love learning about everything that we can do in horticulture, from growing poinsettias for Christmas time to managing an apple orchard. And I just love that I get to learn so much from everyone in the industry, and I also love watching my plants grow and succeed and go on to feed people. That is really rewarding.
Sounds like it. Well, Caitlin, thank you for being here and participating in our HDS podcast. It was so good to learn about the use of pesticides and chemicals and what to do and what not to do on our gardens and lawn. And as always, HDS, thanks you for tuning in. And we look forward to more podcasts in the future where we create a learning organization through training, skill development, and growth for HDS staff. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori.